Welcome to the after party. It's time to change. You're just getting started. You can teach an old dog new ways, and not just on Saturdays.
Hello, you delightful people. It's Anna David with After Party Pod. Yeah, the show about addiction and recovery. And today we get a lot into mental illness, which is it's an addendum to what we do here. And it was great because I have a weird thing where I am less comfortable talking about that than I am talking about addiction and alcoholism. And it's sort of the opposite, I think, of the societal bias, which is that, you know, a lot of empathy for mental illness. I mean, not a lot, let's be honest, but comparatively speaking, where addiction and alcoholism is seen so much more as a moral issue. I'm sort of the opposite. I don't know, in terms of the shame factor. I'll say anything about being an alcoholic or being an addict, and I'm just weird about mental illness. So whatever, I'll save it for therapy. I didn't mean to get so serious so fast. What's going on? Well, hey, I should probably tell you that this podcast is brought to you by Audible. And you, that what that means. So it's like, yeah, whatever. What does that mean for you? What it means for you is that you can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial if you just go to audibletrial.com/afterpartypod. I'll tell you, I got the Lena Dunham memoir on Audible, and I've been listening to it. You can get a lot of other stuff too. So yeah, go do that. Why not? 30-day free trial, free book. This is America, or if it's not America, welcome. I love an international listenership. But we like free stuff. Who doesn't like free stuff, right? Speaking of which, After Party Chat, the website that accompanies this podcast, is free. I mean, as opposed to, say, the New York Times, or you got to subscribe, and other websites, it's totally free. And it has a lot of articles and things you would like. So go check that out if you haven't already. So I was going to give shout outs to people who have been reviewing the podcast, but then I thought, why not give shout outs to our Twitter friends? Like those people who tweet about the show regularly, lovingly, make such a difference. Particularly today, I'm going to talk about Hannah. Maybe it's Hannah. Hannah Bobana on Twitter. It's a whole thing. Well, no, it's not a whole thing. It's spelled exactly how it sounds. It's just that there's a lot of capital letters in it right now. Hannah, HANNAHBOBANNA90. Yeah, that's a commitment. Go follow her. She's the sweetest. And how about Lisa Porter? How about our friend Lisa Porter? What you guys do makes such a difference. So if you other people who are not those two want to make such a difference, tweet at us. Yeah, tweet at me personally, however you want to do it. And review us on the podcast, on the iTunes, where you will help us go up in the rankings and help other people find us. And you are therefore doing your part to help addiction and alcoholism get destigmatized. It's pretty easy, right? Anyway, today's guest is lovely. Her name is Lisa Sunstedt, S-U-N. I'm going to spell it because it's more complicated than you might think. Sundstedt. She's a comedian, a writer, an actress, voiceover artist, and somebody I learned today who put on those shows for her parents. You know, those shows. I don't know. I used to make my mother and our neighbors listen to me sing songs from Chorus Line that I was too young to understand. Like, I knew tits and ass were things you shouldn't be talking about, but I really didn't get what any of it meant. Anyway, Lisa managed to make that into a career when she was very young, going on to do these shows in Morocco, and she sang with Shana Na. I mean, there is so much going on. She's also been sober, I believe. I have no memory. We talk about that in the show, but I believe she said over 7 years, and we talk about that. Straight up alcoholic. She didn't mess around with any of these drugs. She just went for the liquid drug of alcohol. And we talk about how she worked on Chelsea Lately. She created, sorry, the main thing she did is she created a show called Pretty Funny Women, which is the longest running all-female comedy show in the country. She started it in 1995. She's done a lot. And like I said, we get into the mental illness, the bipolar, which I'm not always, that's how I started, not always super comfortable talking about because it's sort of new discovery in my life. Anyway, so with that, you know, just keep listening. Those are just the cliff notes. You'll love this. Lisa Sunstedt.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh, my God. I think my copy has, like, bloodstains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as right. I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
So, hi, I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, please,
it's great to be here.
Please, please. I've heard such good things about you. Now I follow you on Twitter.
I know, I just saw that and I followed you back.
This is like we're now BFFs.
Yes,
like
absolutely.
That's what that means in 2014.
Yes,
it So we were just talking about how you started Pretty Funny Women.
Yes.
Did you just tell me 20 years ago?
I can't do math, but it was in 96.
Seems like it's 20. Oh, well, so maybe 14, in 2 years.
It'll be 18, yes. 18 years.
Old enough to drink in Europe.
Yes.
Is 18? Your show.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Good thing I didn't live there.
Yeah. I mean, a good alcoholic would have moved there. Yeah. So you started it. Well, let's just actually literally go back to the beginning. Where are you from?
I'm from Oceanside, California.
Okay. Which is near here.
Yeah. San Diego County.
Okay.
Yeah. It's about 2 hours south.
Okay.
With the traffic, 5.
Yeah. 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 Well, I mean, where I live 10 blocks away is with the traffic 5 hours, yeah, practically.
Exactly.
And so good place to drink, I would imagine.
Sure. I mean, I drank all throughout high school. Who didn't?
Yeah, of course. So when was your first drink?
My first drink was, I was at a school dance, mm-hmm, and Greg Conway.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Greg. He's a listener, you know.
He probably is. My mother made me have her drop me off at the dance. Mm-hmm. And I said, drop me off at the edge of the parking lot because I'm too embarrassed to be seen by my mom.
Of course.
Dropping me off at the dance. Yeah. So I'm walking across the parking lot with my girlfriend, and Greg Conway drives up in his truck and he goes, hey, girls, you want to go have a brewski? So I was like, okay. And I'd never had a drink of anything.
Wait,
before.
What grade was this?
I was 15.
Okay, so like sophomore?
Ninth grade. Yeah. So we pulled off into some dirt road, and I had probably half a beer, mm-hmm, and I'll never forget the way I felt. I got so high. Mm-hmm. I was like, I can't believe this feeling. This was like the greatest. I had discovered heaven.
Yeah.
And the dance was more fun, and the guys were cuter, and I was cuter, and suddenly confident, and it was just... I was like, I can't believe I've never experienced this before. I've been missing out all this time.
God, that so brings me back, that feeling. And it's like half a beer.
Yeah, half a beer.
And that's all it took.
Yes.
And had you been curious about drinking before? Did you know anything about it?
I don't think I ever thought about it. Even though my parents drank a lot, there was, mm-hmm, always alcohol around our house. I don't think it ever really occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was a little rebellious, I think, at, mm-hmm, that age, and just wanted to try something I wasn't supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then it was on.
And so what happened? So that dance, you're like, this is the best time I've ever had.
That dance was great. I just, yeah, got buzzed.
Yeah.
And that's a nice place to be.
Sure
buzzed.
Remember that? That's hard, yeah, to remember.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Yes. I don't remember getting buzzed. I mean, it hasn't happened in many, many, many years.
How long are you sober?
7.5 years.
Nice.
So it was June 10th, 2007.
Nice.
Which is the AA birthday, ironically. I didn't pick that date.
Look at that.
Isn't that cool? So I never want to go out.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose that date.
Yeah. You know, like people who, but this is my warning. People who get so attached to their dates, you always hear like, okay, like this guy, I've talked about this on the podcast, I think, but this guy, I remember when I was new, he got like a trademark tattooed on his shoulder of his date.
Oh, no.
And everyone's like, he's going to go out. And he did.
Yeah.
Which is just to say, I'm sure you're fine.
Yeah. Well, if I do go out, I'm going to have to come back
on June 10th.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. 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 Okay, no problem. No problem. We can, yeah, obviously control the exact time we come back.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you were buzzed. You were in like a freshman.
Mm-hmm. And having a great time.
And then what happened?
And nothing happened that night. It was just a fun night. Mm-hmm. And, but then I proceeded to do it every weekend mm-hmm. with my friends. And one time my parents went out of town, and these three seniors came and picked me up. Mm-hmm. And we went to the school, the junior high school, mm-hmm. and sat on the steps. And they bought me a bottle of Tickle Pink.
What's that?
Do you remember that one? It's like Boone's Farm. It's like a cheap, gross, two-buck chuck.
Yeah.
I drank the entire bottle.
How sick were you that night?
Oh, my God. I peed in front of them.
Yeah. But not in your pants, so that's not so bad.
Exactly. Like, I just was like, I have to go, and I just took my pants. And then apparently, I don't remember a lot of it because I think I blacked out, but mm-hmm. I was crying and throwing up. Mm-hmm. And
a great night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just making a complete ass of myself in front of these guys, and then they had to carry me in the house. Mm-hmm. And, of course, sick as a dog the next day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it never occurred to me that this is a problem and I shouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I just thought, oh, everybody does this and this is the way it is. And
but weren't they doing it too? Or did you notice maybe they weren't as bad?
I don't think people... I don't know. The friends I hung out with drank. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that people drank an entire bottle of wine. Mm-hmm. And did that, you know, pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization.
Right.
Feeling horrible about yourself.
But did you back then? Or were you just like, this is fine. This is great. Yeah.
Nothing. I thought it was funny and cool.
Yeah.
And I was bragging about it.
Yeah.
To people.
And so how often did that start happening?
That didn't happen a lot. Mm-hmm. I kind of, I guess you could say, managed and controlled it for a while throughout high school. I was very high functioning. Mm-hmm. So I was on the speech team and I was a cheerleader and I did all those things in high school and the activities, and it never affected my grades, and I hid it from my parents. Mm-hmm. And I just, but I remember having hangovers every Sunday.
Oh yeah.
And that is something I do not miss.
Yeah. You know what? I kind of liked them.
You did?
Well, only because in the Coke years, they were so bad. They weren't hangovers. They were just days of being suicidal.
Yeah.
So the hangovers were like, I don't know if you're a sort of type A person. I feel like you could be. Mm-hmm. But they were the one time where I just didn't put pressure on myself to do. I could just watch movies.
Yeah.
Smoke cigarettes.
Give yourself permission.
Eat a lot. Like, I didn't mind the hangovers.
Oh, God, I did.
Yeah.
Just that sick feeling, that headachey feeling, like the shaky feeling. It's just like, ugh, I'm so glad I don't have that anymore. I'm so happy.
Yeah. So that was just, you were just drinking on like Saturday nights, which is Friday, a high schooler. It's hard to do a lot more than that.
Right.
And then what happened?
And then I never went to college. I went to like 1 year of community mm-hmm. college and dropped out. I mm-hmm. couldn't handle it. And I became an entertainer. I became a singer-dancer and started touring the world.
How did that happen?
I was always into drama and acting, and I was always producing shows for my parents when I was little.
Oh, you mean like doing those shows where you make them sit and watch?
Yes, exactly. Oh, okay. You charge them to get in.
Oh, God, those were so great.
Yeah.
Didn't all kids... I did those. Didn't all kids do those?
I don't think all kids do that.
What were your numbers that you would say? And did you get, like, neighborhood kids to do it, too?
Yeah. Well, my brothers would be in the show, and I would write little parts for them. So it was always... You know, my mom is a career counselor, and she says the thing you were doing as a kid for fun is what you should be doing as an adult for work. Isn't that interesting?
That's so fascinating. I mean, I will say I put on those shows where I would sing and lip sync, and I should not be doing that. Not to defy your mother. But yeah, God, those were so fun.
I know.
Our poor mothers. I mean, my mom just sat through show after show. Yeah. Maybe they were cute. But yours were probably good because then you became an actual professional singer and dancer.
I don't know how good they were, but because I would do dramas. Can you imagine?
Written. Your originals.
Based on soap operas that I'd been watching.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So, but what I liked about it, you're like, I used to produce shows for my family. Like, you actually call it, like, producing.
Producing. Yeah. Well, that's what it is, you know? You get the whole thing together. You get the cast together.
Did you do the, what's it called? The
flyers? Programs?
No. Programs.
No, I don't think I ever did programs, but I did, like... I do remember charging mm-hmm. them to get
in. How much?
I think it was like 50 cents, uh-huh. and they paid, and I made some money.
Yeah.
And so that was really fun.
Yeah. So then, and so how did you then, you know, transition into doing it professionally?
Well, I, okay, when I was in junior college, I only went for a year, but I had an acting teacher who mm-hmm. wanted me to play the lead mm-hmm. in his original musical, mm-hmm. but I had never sung, I don't know how to. With the correct
I never know these grammatical things.
I had never sung before.
Things. Yeah,
that sounds
never,
right.
I'd never sang. This is embarrassing.
And so I had to take some lessons and learn. And then I played the lead in this show, and I really liked it. And I continued singing and and studying. And then I got this gig when I was like 22. I got this gig in Morocco with a woman. This sounds fake when I tell this story. Yeah. Her name was Gypsy.
Uh-huh.
I never even knew her last name.
Was she American?
Yes.
Moroccan. Okay.
Yes.
Gypsy.
And she had contracts with the Hyatt Hotel in Casablanca. Mm-hmm. And she would go to Egypt and she would go to all these different places and take dancers with her and put on a show.
What kind of dance were you doing?
Well, I wasn't a dancer. I was the singer in the show.
Okay.
But there were like these five girls with me who were stunning, mm-hmm. but had no talent. Mm-hmm. So they could barely dance and they couldn't sing. Mm-hmm. And I was carrying the whole show. Mm-hmm. And the show was horrible. But I got paid $250 a week to go live in Morocco for 2 months, all expenses paid, including food.
And I've been to Morocco. $250 can go pretty far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you're all your food's paid for and yeah. you're living in a hotel.
You're banking it.
Yeah. And we did one show at midnight, and that was my introduction into show business. And then I went to Tokyo Disneyland, Japan.
With Gypsy?
No, this was a totally different audition for Disney and
wow.
got cast there. And that was 6 months in Tokyo Disneyland. Then I auditioned for Sha Na Na, the 50s band, and sang with them for 4 years.
How do I not know this? That's insane. Sha Na Na.
I was the only girl in the group, and I toured with them for 4 years all over the world.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, and so was, alcoholism alive and well during those years?
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was. Looking back, I drank a lot. Not so much with Sha Na Na because they weren't big partiers. Mm-hmm. So I didn't do it unless other people around me did it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember drinking a little bit too much in Morocco and doing some things that I wasn't proud of.
Like what?
Like leaving with men.
Yeah.
Going to their apartment.
Yeah.
And so dangerous.
Yeah. You know,
in another country with some strange guy.
Yeah.
Having sex with him.
Yeah.
Unprotected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I love how you're like, yeah.
No, I mean, the stuff I did and the fact that it never... Yes, of course it eats at our souls, but I never really suffered repercussions from that.
I know.
Is amazing.
I can't believe I'm alive. I can't believe somebody didn't roofie me and kill
yeah.
me in one of these countries where, I did a lot of really stupid things.
Yeah.
Due to the drinking.
Yeah. So you were doing that stuff. You were up to that stuff, traveling
mm-hmm.
around,
mm-hmm.
But like not drinking that much because.
Well, I didn't notice. If mm-hmm. it was extreme, because mm-hmm. I surrounded myself with people who did the same thing.
Yeah, of course.
So I started doing stand-up comedy in 95, and comedians, that's what they do. They drink. They drink on stage.
Yeah.
And it's funny because in the 20 questions
in
the pamphlet, it says, do you drink at work? And I always, I looked at that and I thought to myself, well, no, I don't drink during the day. But my work was at night.
Yeah.
And I drank.
Yeah.
So I had to mark yes to that eventually when I got out of denial.
Those quizzes, the answers sure do change over the years.
Yeah, they do.
Like the first time I saw one, I was like, no, not really. No. Because denial is such an active part of active alcoholism.
Exactly. And then you go back and you're like, oh, yes to all of them.
Yeah. 20 out of 20.
I win.
The only test I got a perfect score on.
Yes.
And so you became a comic. Mm-hmm. And how did that start? How'd you get in?
Well, I'd always wanted to do sitcoms.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a boyfriend at the time who was a talent agent.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, I want to be on a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, do stand-up comedy. That's your fastest way to get seen by the industry. So I put together an act and I started doing it. And yeah. I never got on a sitcom, but I got a lot of other great things out of it.
Yeah.
Stand-up is a great background to have.
Yeah. I've had so many comics on this show.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the sober comedian show.
Yeah.
With a couple of like musicians and writers and actors thrown in.
Yeah.
It's, you know, but then you ask people, you know, do you think alcoholism is more prevalent in the comedy community? And a lot of them will say no.
I think depression is.
Yeah.
But I don't know about alcoholism. I'd say a lot of comics probably smoke pot.
Really?
Yes, which I never got into.
No, it's horrible.
No.
Why didn't you like it?
Paranoia.
Fuck yeah.
I would get so paranoid and I would think, everybody knows I'm stoned.
Yeah, but they were probably stoned too because you were smoking pot with people.
I didn't like the out of control feeling.
Yeah.
And I never got the out of control feeling when I was drinking. I just got kind of manic.
Yeah.
On it, kind of high.
Yeah, I just, pot was my paranoia. My continuous looping thought was, nobody understands what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Nobody understands, and they probably didn't.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't, pot just
never did it for me.
Out.
I just did not like it.
What drugs did you like?
I didn't really do drugs.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I did crystal meth when I was in high school, like twice. Uh-huh. And I remember feeling so guilty about it the next day. Like, oh my, what am I doing? If my parents ever found out, they'd kill me. So I kind of stopped doing that. So I wasn't really, I didn't do drugs.
Wow.
It was just a shitload of drinking.
And so you're a comic, you are drinking, and then what started to happen with the work stuff, all the good stuff that came from being a comic?
Well, a lot of good stuff happened. Like I got an agent and a manager, and mm-hmm. I got the Montreal Comedy Festival, mm-hmm. But I should tell you that in between all of this that was happening is I was severely depressed, mm-hmm. like a couple weeks out of every month, and I thought it was my period, so I thought it was like PMS.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to a gynecologist and told him that I had really bad PMS,
mm-hmm.
and he put me on a drug called Paxil. Mm-hmm. It's an antidepressant.
Oh, yeah. Like you say that, like, A, I haven't taken it, and B, like all the listeners have taken it.
All right. So, and within a week, I went into a full-blown manic episode, and they diagnosed me bipolar.
Bipolar 1 or 2?
Bipolar 1.
Well, I'm 2.
Oh, nice. So you're on the depressed side. You don't get the manias.
I don't get the manias.
You get the little hypomania?
No. I'll tell you, this is a new diagnosis, and I'm not totally as comfortable as you are talking about it.
Oh.
But I have to. I mean, I knew it would come up because I knew that was, you know, part of it. I was diagnosed in February of this year.
Oh, so it's new for you.
It's a new thing.
That's a scary thing.
It's not, because I was diagnosed with depression, I guess, 20 years ago,
okay.
and have been on the whole round of all of them, including Effexor, for years and years and years. And
did that help?
I sure thought it did. Mm-hmm. I really, really thought it did. And then just the depression of starting this site last year and the place I lived, and I couldn't walk because I had sciatica, and like all this stuff just kind of came crashing down. And I went to a psychiatrist who actually really knows her shit. I don't know what your journey with psychiatrists has been.
Oh, terrible. God. But I have a good one now, thank God.
Yeah.
But to find somebody who cares about you.
To find somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Right.
Was almost impossible.
Right, especially if you're going through insurance.
Well, that's the thing. I learned, unfortunately, that I couldn't go through insurance. I mean, they were the craziest people I ever met.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, you know, tell people, you know, you can't get help if you go through insurance, but this was the best $250 I ever spent was
right.
on this psychiatrist who could right. actually, you know, and we just talked about everything. And she's like, you know, Effexor is mainly for anxiety. And I think your anxiety is brought on by your mood disorder. And she put me on Lamictal, which has just been the wonder
drug. Isn't it a miraculous drug?
Are you on it?
Yes.
What a
200 milligrams a day.
Me too.
Isn't it a miracle?
Oh my God.
And it has a little bit of an antidepressant in it. Too. So it helps.
I'll tell you, and I am knocking on wood, I have not been depressed since I got put on it, which is a miracle.
That is so great.
So, and Effexor is like, did you ever go on?
No.
You went straight from Paxil to Lamictal or no?
No, I went, I think to lithium.
Uh huh.
And, but, you know, I didn't take any of my meds as directed while I was drinking.
Would you just take them periodically?
Yeah. Or it would say on the bottle, don't mix with alcohol.
Oh, well,
so I would just be like, well, I won't take these meds then.
Oh.
I'll just, you know, because I was in denial for a long time that I had it. So
bipolar or alcoholism?
Bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, alcoholism for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought I was an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
But bipolar disorder, I was probably in denial all the way up until I got sober.
Mm-hmm.
At 40. I got sober at 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I realized that I was still having depression and moods after being sober and working a program, I was like, there's something wrong. I really have to address this.
And so, but you had been taking the lithium-ish up until that point?
I would go to different doctors and not really listen to their advice and not really take them every day and sometimes forget them and have episodes. I had lots of episodes. And I feel like my 30s was one big episode.
Really?
Yeah.
What was an episode like?
Well, a manic episode is you lose a lot of friends because you're talking too fast and you're grandiose and I thought I was going to be a star or I thought I was.
So it's like being on cocaine.
Jesus, I guess.
When it works. You've never done it.
I don't really know what it's like to be on cocaine. You know what it sounds like to me? Ecstasy. Because you're also very, like, free with your body and you want to be touched and you want to have sex and you want to create and you love everybody. And
you'd think you'd make more friends. But yeah. It's exhausting.
But your actual friends don't really want to be around you because you're acting strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's very hard to reach somebody who's manic. So it's hard to say you are in an episode right now because you'd be like, fuck off. I'm having a great time. I feel good because you feel so good.
You know, I had one right when I got on Lamictal, a month or two, I had one night.
One night.
Where I knew it was mania. It was the weirdest thing. I knew it. I didn't want to buy an island. But what I was feeling was not, I'd never felt that way. And I was like, and I started Googling, can Lamictal bring on? And it can.
Wow.
And so, you know, online about antidepressants, you can find anything in the world.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I don't trust myself. I'm putting myself to sleep. So it wasn't a full on, because I could sleep.
Yeah.
And like one of the symptoms of mania is you can't, right?
No, you can't. You don't want to and you don't need it.
Yeah.
But I'm on like three drugs right now.
Oh, okay.
I'm on Lamictal, Abilify, and now I just got put on Seroquel.
Okay.
Because I was starting to go manic.
Okay.
And it's a good sleeping for bipolar. It's a good sleeping drug.
Okay.
It's non-addictive, which is great.
Yeah. What about trazodone? You ever try that one?
No.
Oh. It's because Ambien was my best friend.
Oh, was it? My mom is addicted to that. And we're very worried about her because she forgets things constantly. Did you have a memory loss?
Yeah, I think I still do, frankly.
Really?
Well, yeah. I mean, do you know how much she takes?
She says she only takes a little, but her memory is bad.
Well, but mothers are older.
True. She's 67.
My mom has never taken any drugs and... Her memory. Actually, her memory is better than mine. I don't know what Ambien did to my memory. It was bad, though. I was taking like 10 a night. And
oh, my God.
Really, you know.
And then people sleepwalk on that stuff and eat and do kind of...
I know. It did make news for the eating. I don't think I did that. But what would happen to me is I would take like 10 at night, you know, to try to sleep. And then the next day, sometimes I would be in the car and I'd be like, where am I going? Why am I in the car? And I, you know, stuff like that.
So it would still be in your system.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So trazodone is the one for me. It's non-addictive. It's, you know, for anxious people who can't sleep.
Okay.
So just log it in your brain if the Seroquel, you know.
Seroquel works like a charm.
It does.
Oh, my God.
But is it...
Within 15 minutes, I'm asleep.
Yeah.
And there's no, like, getting high feeling first. There's no, like, ooh, I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
It's just I'm really drowsy and I have to go to sleep.
And sleep was hard to come by before?
When I'm going into a state of mania, it's called hypomania.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the best. If you could bottle that and sell it, you would be a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best parts of being bipolar is the hypomanic state.
Mm-hmm.
But my psychiatrist said, you're in a... episode right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a downside. You have to remember there's a crash.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get sleep. That's the number one thing for bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
Is you have to get a good night's sleep every night.
Because
if you miss a night of sleep, you can go into an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it can happen very fast.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That is so, it's interesting the difference between bipolar 1 and 2 because that's not my experience at all.
Right. I know that bipolar 2, you live a lot with depression.
Not since this drug.
That's great.
But yeah, I mean, of course. And I just, you know, there's so much depression in my family. I just, you know, accepted it.
Yeah. Doesn't it suck to think of all the hours you missed out on feeling that way?
Well, yeah. I mean, my depression's interesting, though. I was never, I was suicidal towards the end of, you know, the years of cocaine, but that's, I don't get that. I can't get out of bed. Like, I've never gotten that.
Mm.
I get the like low grade thoughts are very bad, but I am fully functioning.
Okay.
Fully.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah. It's weird.
That's good. I had, after my first major manic episode, I had a depression where I was in bed for 2 months.
Literally.
And I wasn't sober. I didn't have any 12-step group. I didn't have a therapist. I didn't have anybody to talk to. I was just alone and pretty much writing suicide notes every day and reading about Kurt Cobain and reading about Ernest Hemingway. I'm reading about all these people who'd killed themselves and going, how did they get the nerve to do it, you know?
Did you have a plan?
The day before, well, I'll tell you. It was September 29th, 1996, and I was at the lowest point, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to take all the pills I have, because I had all these drugs from all these different psychiatrists sitting on my nightstand, and then I said a prayer, and I said, what do I do, God? I want to take all these drugs, and this voice came to me very clearly and said, get a puppy. I was like, get a puppy? I don't even know if I'm allowed to have dogs in this building, but okay, if God told me to get a puppy, I'm getting one. So I called a recycler. I got the recycler. I called the first dad, went and got a puppy. And that was the beginning of the end of my depression.
Because
you're being of service constantly.
Yeah.
You get out of yourself. I had to get out of the house. I had to walk her every day. So slowly but surely, she saved my life.
Wow. Yeah, I feel like one of my cats did that with me. I mean, I know that I got sober like right after getting her.
Yeah, because you want to be a parent to them.
Yeah.
You want to be as good as you can be.
Well, and you get like, you remember, I mean, because one of the major symptoms of depression, of course, is that you don't really get you're depressed anymore. I mean, that's my experience, that I forget that I'm in a state.
Right. You just think this is the way it is.
Yeah.
There's no light at the tunnel.
Yeah.
You know, this is my life. And every thought that's coming to you is negative.
It's real.
Goes through a dark filter.
Yeah.
And there's no hope. It's
and
awful.
So you get this adorable, loving thing, and your brain goes, huh, I think I'm making this up right now. You know? Well, maybe it's not all bad. I don't know.
Right.
You know.
Well, when you look at the face of a puppy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard not to smile.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get this puppy, and then you get out of bed. Because you have to walk.
Start getting out of bed slowly but surely. And then I guess it took about 2 months later that I was functioning again. But I was always still cycling with depressions and more depressions and manias. And I suffered throughout my 30s. Couldn't have a relationship with a man. I would have episodes of paranoia and he's cheating on me and I'd break up with him. And that was my pattern. Meet a guy, fall madly in love within a day, date him for 2 months, and then think something bad, like he's doing something, and then break up with him. And then I did that over and over again in my 30s.
Right.
With all these different guys.
And then what?
Couldn't sustain.
What's it like now?
Well, now I have a boyfriend, and we've been together almost 3 years.
Amazing.
And we live together, and it's healthy, and he's never seen me manic, and I hope he never will, because I get really mean. Really mean. Raging, angry, screaming.
Even though you feel so good during those episodes?
Well, it goes to a point, like first you feel really good and high, and then you get a little bit out of your mind, and then you get the flip side of it is extreme paranoia and rage.
Wow.
Yeah. Because anyone who, if you didn't sleep for a week, you would be irritable too.
Yeah.
Anyone would.
Yeah.
Be like snappy and like, fuck off and no patience.
Yeah.
So that's what happens.
Wow.
Is you get really, it's ugly.
It's ugly.
Yeah. And if I wasn't sober, if I didn't have my sobriety, my program, my sponsor, the steps, a psychiatrist, all the things that you learn to do in program is to take care of yourself. If I didn't have any of that, I would not have the life I have today.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So, okay. So what, between the getting the puppy and getting sober, what happened?
Kind of blew my what do you mean, my career?
No, or? Like mentally.
Mentally, just...
Because that's a long time before you got sober.
I know. Because I would have bouts of good times.
Yeah.
You know, it would be fun sometimes. You know, like they say, fun, then fun with problems, yeah. and just problems.
Yeah.
So it was fun for a long time.
Yeah.
I like to have shots of tequila and make out with guys.
Yeah. And who doesn't?
Yeah. And so in my 30s, it's sort of cute, I guess, when you're in your 20s to do mm-hmm. that behavior. But when you're approaching your late 30s, it's just pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And all your friends are married and mm-hmm. having kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I can't figure out life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how come I can't figure this out? I'm very smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always high functioning in my career.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. Because I thought alcoholics were people that had DUIs, which mm-hmm. I never had, or just living homeless or losing everything.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that.
Yes.
When that's, I mean, what, 0.001% of alcoholics? Who knows?
Yeah.
It's not a high percentage.
Yeah, so I was high functioning.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
I just drink like everybody else drinks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
Never thought I was an alcoholic until I was 40 years old and I had all this stuff on the outside that I'd worked so hard for. Like I had a great job writing. I was writing on Chelsea Lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my own condo that I bought, and I had my dog, and I had a nice car. But I was suicidal again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got on my knees and I prayed and I said, what do I do? Plus, I couldn't ever make a relationship last. I wanted a boyfriend so bad. I was mm-hmm. lonely. Mm-hmm. You know the loneliness that comes with alcoholism.
Oh, sure.
It's like that void in the pit of your stomach that never goes away.
The hole
it's
in your
soul. So scary, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So I said a prayer. Again, surrendered everything. I was in a total surrender at that state. I believe I was in a step one.
Right.
And this voice said, go to AA and you'll have everything you ever wanted.
Wow.
Super clear, crystal clear, one sentence.
Had you thought of AA before?
No. I was like, I mean, I had been to AA meetings with friends.
Yeah.
Like just to check them out. And sometimes I would like to go to the candlelight meetings at mm-hmm. night, at 10 o'clock at night at Radford Hall.
Oh, I don't even know about this.
Yeah. And I would just sit in the back and listen to people's stories and think, this is cool. These people are cool.
Right.
You know, because they're so open and honest. But I never identified because mm-hmm. they had these crazy stories of going to jail and,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing meth. And I just couldn't relate.
Mm-hmm.
So I was listening for the differences, not the similarities.
Yeah. And so you hear this voice. You go to a meeting
the next day.
Mm-hmm. You just find one.
I called a friend.
Yeah.
And she came and got me. And
uh-huh.
she took me to my meeting. And,
uh-huh.
and then from that moment on, I did everything that was suggested of me.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally in surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll get a sponsor. I'll work the steps. I'll get a commitment. I'll do whatever anyone tells me to do. And my life started getting better.
Are you still like that?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I don't work as good a program. It's hard to work a program when life is going well.
It sure is.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But then sometimes I can feel myself slipping into ego.
Yeah.
I'm like too overly focused on my career.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what am I trying to get? I'm trying to get that. I'm trying to fill something that cannot be filled with material things.
What about the relationship? Do you try to do it with that?
With my boyfriend?
Yeah. With just like... you know, like in terms of like the obsession to drink, like I think about this with relationships. I mean, more when they're new.
Mm-hmm.
The alcoholism can really kick in
mm-hmm.
for me.
Yeah, it's like love addiction.
Yeah, when it's like, oh my God, I haven't been high in years.
Yeah,
and here's
you can
this
get
man.
Totally high off a man. I've done that my whole life.
Did you not do that with your current relationship?
Well, this one was different because we were both sober,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I was coming from a more grounded place.
Mm hmm.
So, of course, I was madly in love with him the first week of dating him. That's just who I am.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm an addict. Too. I'm a compulsive gambler, too, by the way.
Whoa, we can't wait to get into that. Okay.
Yeah, so I do anything to the extreme.
Okay, so you're madly in love the first week, and then but you control it.
But he's very slow.
Uh-huh.
So I couldn't do my behavior with him. Because he was like really healthy.
Yeah. And he wouldn't go on the ride.
No. And he just came out off of a divorce. So he was like gun shy about relationships. So he would not buy into my like flirtations or any of my behaviors.
You're like, let's get married now. Well, behaviors. Yeah.
I would be texting him and like, are you still super cute? That was one of my texts to him.
Wait,
and
he didn't respond. Men don't run away when you say that?
He didn't, but he didn't respond.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
He just didn't, he didn't respond. He wasn't a sex addict. He wasn't, you know, inappropriate at all. He was just very appropriate.
Yeah.
Went super slow. So it was good for me.
Yeah. Have you ever been on the alcoholic ride with a, like,
oh my God,
with somebody who'll do it with you?
Yes.
And you're just like, oh my God, we're like on meth.
Yeah. Well, that's what would happen to me. I would do that with lots of guys.
Yeah.
And we'd get high on each other for 2 months. And then the reality would kick in. And this guy, after I'd see his apartment, and I'd be like, what am I doing?
Right.
Like,
if he had an apartment.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So tell me about the gambling.
Oh, well, I love video poker. I'm kind of obsessed with it.
Okay.
Yeah. If I'm in a casino, I completely lose control. I went on the Gamblers Anonymous site and I did their 20 question thing.
19?
No, but a lot, like half.
Mm-hmm.
And it runs in my family, gambling. But I can't be in a casino and not lose like $2,000.
Wow. So you just don't go to them, or you do?
I will go occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
My boyfriend refuses to go with me anymore. He's like, I don't like your gambling personality. You know, you're out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something I have to do alone, which
isn't, doesn't feel great.
It's not that fun.
Yeah.
You kind of feel like a loser.
You'll go to Vegas or video poker you can do at
home. I would do it at a casino, Indian reservation casino.
Okay.
That's like half an hour from my mom's house. So I'd go stay with her and then drive to the casino.
Right, right.
And just play blackjack and play video poker all night and get high off of it.
Yeah.
I sat in a seat for 12 hours straight.
Wow. Yeah.
I didn't eat. I drank orange juice to keep my blood sugar up just so I could continue gambling.
Was your mom like, honey? Sarah, she didn't really know.
My mom never judges.
Right.
My mom is like, well, if that's what you want to do for fun, maybe you're having a midlife crisis. Have a good time. Have a good time. But other people in my family were like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. My boyfriend, what are you doing? I'm worried about you. This is... So I've kind of slowed down on it.
Yeah. Did you think about doing that program?
No. I can't have another program.
Do you have a lot right now?
Well, I go to Al-Anon sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And my program, and it's like, I just can't bring on another.
I hear you, dude.
That's fun for me. We don't have that many fun things to do anymore.
If it's fun and not unmanageable and you're not thinking about it all the time.
Right. It's not making my life unmanageable. I'm not going to lose my house over it.
Yeah.
You know? I only lose what I can afford.
Yeah.
And then I feel bad about myself after. And I have a shame spiral for 3 days.
Yeah.
And then you forget and do it again.
Just I mean, does it exacerbate symptoms of bipolar, though? Yes.
It can bring on a mania.
Yeah.
Yep. And when you're manic, you want to spend money.
Uh-huh.
So they can both, like, trigger
Do you ever win? Do you ever come away
Yes,
winner?
That's what sucks you in.
But you leave with money?
No, I never leave with money.
Right.
I never leave with money. But I did win $5,000 once on a hand of video poker.
Uh-huh.
I hit, it was a triple play machine, and I was dealt a royal flush.
And did you leave, or you just
No,
stayed?
I kept that money. I kept
it. Oh, good.
So I did go home with like $4,000, and I played with the other 1,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you say it's in your family, who gambles?
My mom was addicted to the races for many years of her life. Mm-hmm. My grandpa was a gambler. He taught us to play craps when we were little kids.
Mm-hmm.
My brother is in GA.
Uh-huh.
I think he has a year now,
mm-hmm.
which is good. And I have another brother who's a gambler. He's not working a program right now.
I mean, that is really in your family.
Yeah.
That is not fucking around.
It is.
What about alcoholism?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Untreated.
Mm-hmm. You the first?
Yes.
And
the only.
How does your family respond to that?
I don't think they take me seriously.
Mm-hmm.
They go, you're not an alcoholic.
Yeah.
But okay, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
So I don't. See, most people who knew me wouldn't say I had a problem with alcohol.
Yeah.
Because it's an internal thing.
It sure is.
It's an inside job.
And when you manage to not get DUIs and not make a big fool of yourself, were you doing a lot of drinking alone?
I would drink, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, nightly. That's a way to...
Nightly.
Yeah.
With my wine.
Yeah.
A couple glasses of wine.
Yeah. Did anybody say, okay, yeah, I knew
I'm
it.
I'm a therapist.
Okay.
Yeah. My therapist said.
And that's the only person?
Yes.
Interesting.
Oh, actually, no. I forgot to tell you this part. I went to a 12-step program for sex and love addiction when I was in my 30s because I thought that was my problem because I kept doing this behavior around men.
Yeah.
And when I did my 4-step in that program, my 5th step, my sponsor told me I was an alcoholic. She looked at all of my history and said, you need to go to 5 AA meetings.
Yeah. And lucky you, it's a much more fun program.
Yeah.
AA.
Yeah.
Over SLA.
And there's a lot of cute guys.
In SLAA?
No, in AA.
Yeah, seriously. Do you go to women's meetings? I kind of have a tough time getting inspired to do that.
I'm supposed to go to one tonight and I'm dreading it already.
I've gone through phases where I can do it, but like, you know, whatever it takes to get you in the seat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I recently heard somebody say, you know, validation was my first drug, and I relate to that.
I like that.
Yeah, like, you know, I like a little attention.
Here's how long do you have?
I'll be 14 in November.
Nice. I don't know if you're like this, but I can only go to meetings now that are solution oriented. I can't hear about the problem anymore. I can't hear the drunkalogs.
I can.
You can?
Yes.
Oh,
I totally can. I still find them fascinating. But then again, I write about this and talk about this all day long. Like, I may have a never-ending capacity to be fascinated by this.
Oh, okay. See, I get like, we know what you did. Everyone did it. Everyone did it. Get to what you're doing today.
I mean, I like that. My home group is like, you know, you're not allowed to talk about. It's not quite that serious. Like, you know, there's
I love that.
Yeah. Oh, it's a
where's
great
that?
Meeting.
In Hollywood?
Yeah. I'll tell you after.
Okay.
I mean, look, I guess if anyone's listening, it's the best meeting in LA. So
nice.
Sunday mornings, 9 a.m. It's early. Las Palmas and Franklin.
That's okay. I would do that if it's a solution-oriented meeting and they talk about the solution.
Oh, God.
Or if it's a big book study, I like those.
I it's weird. I now do a thing. Well, now I've been needlepointing in meetings for years and years and years.
Really?
And part of it is I have a very hard time sitting still.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, you know, because your career too is very like, you do this and you do that and you do this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reason mine is like that is that I can't sit still.
Do you meditate?
Twice a day and
you
have
meditate?
For 10 years. I know.
Oh my
it's
God.
It's shocking.
Good for you.
Somebody took me when I was, I had dinner plans with a girl who I wanted to be friends with in AA. And she's like, oh, you know what? I actually can't go to dinner. I'm going to this meditation lecture. And I wanted to be her friend. So I was like, oh, I'll go to this thing. Didn't want to at all. Heard my meditation teacher is amazing. His name's Tom Knowles. Heard him speak and was like, whatever this man says, I'll do. And I learned the next day.
Really?
And I had no intention of doing this. I had meditated twice a day. For the past 10 years, I've missed days.
That's really good.
It's
like the best thing for you, supposedly.
It is. I mean, Tom and, you know, other people were like, oh my God, as soon as you're doing this for a few years, people are going to come rushing up to you and be like, you are so serene. How do I get that? Not only has no one ever said that to me, no one will ever say that to me. So I don't know. All I can assume is that I'd be less calm if I didn't do it.
Yeah.
You know? So you don't do it?
I don't. I've tried.
Have you ever tried transcendental meditation?
No.
Well, that's, I mean, he teaches something called Vedic meditation, which is an offshoot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way I can say, what it does for people who like to do things,
mm-hmm.
it gives you a mantra.
Oh.
And this mantra is specifically for you, that it is the sound, I'm not explaining this articulately, but it is the sound, the sounds that will calm you. And there are however many different mantras, and they figure out what's the one for you. And I'm telling you, the one you're never allowed to tell anyone what it is.
Oh.
What I repeat in my head instantly calms me.
So you repeat it over and over again.
That's all you're doing.
Instead of focusing on the breath, you're focusing on the mantra.
Yeah, I can never just focus on the breath. Are you kidding me? So, like, I'd get distracted. You don't get distracted from this.
Oh.
It's amazing.
Maybe I'll try that. I'll go with you sometime.
Yeah, well, now I don't. I have a weird thing. I don't like to I would totally tell you. I don't like to meditate with people, which is weird because everyone who learns, like, loves, they get off on the power of the group. I get very distracted by their noises. What Tom did is he taught. I don't even know. I think 30 people in LA, because he lives in Arizona. Mm. So they all teach his method.
Oh.
And they're all over. The previous podcast guest, Jeff Kober, is one of the best teachers in LA. And he'll do a talk. You go. If you want to learn that week, you go 3 times to him. You pay. It's a donation.
Oh.
It's the best deal in town. Next time he talks, I'll take you.
Okay. Yeah. I'd love to go.
Yeah.
Because my boyfriend meditates. And he does. He's constantly telling me. He tells me every day.
Does he do like just the breathing one?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he tells me every day, you need to do this. You need to do this. And I resist it more than anything. So I'm assuming I need to do it. You know how that is.
Yeah. I did it for years. I would be like, for the first 4 years of my sobriety, I would be like, anytime someone talked about it, I'd feel guilty and ashamed. Because I was like, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it's one of our steps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, although our step doesn't get specific about how to do it.
Right.
And then it's just like, it's such a lesson, because then like one day someone took me and I did it. So there's no point in ever beating myself up for things I'm not doing, because I do believe when the time comes, we just naturally do that.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, this is good for me to hear.
Yeah.
I'm definitely open.
Well, the other thing for a type A career woman, mm-hmm. I will tell you, is that my whole life I wanted to write a book. And I didn't do it till I learned to meditate. And now I've published 6.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Well, but
that's huge.
But that's the thing. I mean, that's sobriety. That's AA. That's not me.
Right. That's your higher power.
That's how I learned. And, you know, yeah. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't stop getting fired.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, I can do this one day at a time.
Yeah.
So I believe we can do
6
anything.
6 books?
Yeah.
Amazing.
5 of them didn't sell well at all. So I'm never doing it again. All I do on this podcast is talk about how writing books is the worst way to try to make a living.
Yeah, my best friend has 5 books out.
Well, is your best friend Stephanie?
Yes.
Because she's been on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I love her to death.
Yeah, she's my bestie. We've been together for 20 – together.
Yeah.
We've been best friends for like 20 years.
Danielle told me that.
Yeah.
Yeah, love her. She was amazing on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And like, I want to do stuff with her. Like, I want to go and, you know.
She's fun.
But like, she can get stuff done, like movements around sobriety and, you know, whatever. So she was sober. Oh, so are you sober longer?
Yes.
So did you take her in?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
The book writing's working out a little better for her than it did for me. You know, she's still at it, and hers have sold really well. I had one that sold really well.
That's great.
Never again.
Hey, to accomplish it, to finish it, what a good feeling.
Yeah, it was. And that, whatever. It's a whole thing. I can talk anybody out of doing a book if they ever want to.
I have tried.
Oh, yeah.
I tried writing a book about bipolar disorder, and I couldn't even... No.
Yeah.
I'm not a good long form writer. I'm good with jokes, like short sketches. But anything that's like, you know, becomes in like an essay or type of thing, I can't write. I can't focus
that. I bet you could. I say write essays and not books. That's just my opinion.
Okay.
So we were on meditation. Okay, you got sober. Where were we? I told you I took Ambien. I don't have a memory.
I can't remember.
So let's talk about how you started this show. So what was the inspiration behind it?
I started the show because a guy told me women
weren't.
I was too pretty to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, that's a funny title. Pretty
mm-hmm.
funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my Stephanie Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
I got a bunch of girls together that I thought were really cute.
Mm-hmm.
And we put together this showcase called Pretty Funny Women.
Mm-hmm.
And we sold it out. And I've been doing it ever since.
And where is it? Where does it go?
Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank mm-hmm. once a month. Mm-hmm. And the Comedy Store mm-hmm. in West Hollywood once a month.
And who are some of the people you've had in it?
Over the years?
Yeah.
Oh, Chelsea Handler, Natasha Leggero, Maria Bamford,
mm-hmm.
Margaret Cho,
mm-hmm.
Tig Notaro,
mm-hmm.
who's like my favorite, Danielle Stewart, of course, Stephanie, Sean Pawlowski, Sarah Colonna.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Just pretty much every Trisher, at some time or another,
uh-huh.
some woman that's pretty well known right now has come through the doors and done the show.
Right.
And then I turned it into a school.
Okay.
So 8 years ago, I started teaching. So now I strictly produce shows for my students. I don't produce outside shows anymore.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So where do they go? Like, how could people find it? They just go to prettyfunnywomen.com.
Yep.
And they can sign up for classes. Mm-hmm. It's obviously only in LA, though,
it's
right?
It's 8 weeks, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's $400 for 8 weeks. Isn't that a good deal?
It's a great deal. To get funny?
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
You get a 5-minute set. You do it at a comedy club for a graduation show. And
at Flappers, is that where they mm-hmm. are?
Yeah.
That is awesome. So how many women do you think you've taken through it?
Probably over 600.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do they go on to establish careers?
You know, I've only been teaching for 8 years. Mm-hmm. It takes about 10 years to become a name comic.
Yeah.
So in the next couple years, some of these girls will start to break through. I have one girl who's a regular on Scandal, or recurring on Scandal.
Mm-hmm.
I have girls that are like working now and doing exciting things, mm-hmm. but their name isn't big
yeah.
yet.
Yeah.
They
yeah,
need
yeah.
to get on a show.
Yeah. And okay, but so you started writing on Chelsea Lately.
Yes.
And how did that come about?
Well, I'd worked with Chelsea because she would do my shows every month, Pretty mm-hmm. Funny Women. And then I wrote on Girls Behaving Badly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote on the Chelsea Handler show, which was her first TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And then she brought me on to Chelsea Lately. But in the middle of it, I had a manic episode.
Okay.
And I was completely out of it. I was so crazy and probably really hard to deal with, super emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time that I was writing on that show, I got this huge voiceover campaign,
mm-hmm.
and I had to pick one. Chelsea mm-hmm. wouldn't let me do both.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, you got to choose one.
Mm-hmm.
You can't work here and do your voiceovers.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry, my stomach's growling.
Nobody can hear it. I didn't hear it.
Okay. So I chose the voiceover job, and I left the show.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't fired, but I probably was on my way to being fired because I was acting so weird.
Right.
I didn't know I was in an episode. I didn't
and
know
you weren't sober yet.
I was newly sober,
uh-huh.
like 4 months sober.
Yeah, which is, you know,
that's
a trying
worst.
Time for all of us.
Yeah, it's the worst.
And so then, what this Denise Richards show, which I watch.
Do you?
I will say. I was like had this weird life as a reality show expert. I'm not kidding.
Oh, okay.
Where I was doing columns for Fox News about it and like going on TV shows and talking about reality shows. And so I had to watch everything.
Oh.
And I liked that show.
Mm-hmm. And I was a consultant on that show.
Okay. So what does that mean?
So they brought me in to do a specific episode for Krista Allen.
Mm-hmm.
But the episode was Krista Allen was going to do stand-up comedy. So
wait, because that was before I was friends with her. Now I'm remembering in retrospect.
Yeah, so she did stand up at the Hollywood Improv on the show. And I coached her and helped her write her set.
Richard's show, I can't remember.
Because they're good friends.
Really? I didn't know that.
They had a storyline where they're friends and she said, I want to try stand up.
Uh-huh.
And so Denise supported her in that decision. And
did you know Krista before?
No.
Okay.
Met her on that show.
She's so awesome.
She's so incredibly talented.
I know.
She's one of the most amazing actresses I've ever seen. And she's so good with comedy.
See, and I not to completely do what the guy who gave you your show name did, but like when I would hang out with her, I would just look at her and go, I cannot believe God created someone so beautiful.
I know.
Like it's hard to look at her.
She is one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. I just shot something with her yesterday.
What is it?
It's called The Support Hose.
Uh-huh.
And we're two women who give advice
uh-huh.
to callers.
Uh-huh.
And so we had one girl call in who said that she has herpes and she didn't know how to tell her boyfriend. So we gave her advice on how to tell him.
And how do you get the callers? Like where?
Oh, it's fake.
Oh, okay.
You know, we write the whole script.
Right. So. And you're going to release this on like YouTube or?
We're going to try to get it to Funny or Die.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so today life is good.
Life is
like.
Really good. Life is good.
And
I mean, it can always be better.
What? How could it be better?
I could be making more money.
Uh-huh.
What
would you want?
Well, I wrote a half hour.
Uh-huh.
And it's sitting at APA right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for it to be read.
Mm-hmm.
It's been there for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And that's frustrating.
Yeah.
Because you know how hard it is to write something and complete it and finish it.
Yes.
And then get notes. And we did like 6 passes on it from notes from this showrunner friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And we made it tight and perfect. And
so
it's
so you wrote it with
I have
someone.
A partner.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And we wrote this script, and we can't get anyone to read it.
Ugh.
So it's just sitting on someone's desk.
Ugh, I know
and
that.
And it's so frustrating. Because yeah. it's like, this thing could make me a lot of money.
Yeah.
If we could get it out there.
Agents, APA, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to be there. You know, low-hanging fruit. That's like what these agents, you know. And yeah. I've learned you can't resent them because...
They're busy.
Well, they just want to make money. So yeah. they don't want to read something that they are not 100% positive they can make money on.
Right.
So why waste the time?
So you have to do all the work yourself. So we have yeah. to somehow try to attach talent to
yeah.
it first.
Yeah. yeah.
But you need an agent to attach talent. So it's like such a catch 22.
I know. Semi I gave up on all that. I did it for a minute. I did one screenplay for, it was non-guild. But it's just so...
You wrote a screenplay too?
This was what I was trying to do before I ever wrote books.
Wow.
Very ineffectively, because I would imagine. Do like 2 grams of cocaine and then
stay up for like 5 days?
And try to write a script, but I would just end up revising one line over and over and over again. That's the truth. But then when I got sober, I started...
One line.
Literally, for 2 years.
While you were doing one line.
Yeah, was doing many more than one line. And it was better before I started. Like, the line was fine. I'm telling you, it's true. But then, you know, when I first got sober, I was working in magazines and I was trying to do it. And mm-hmm. then I'm not very good at it, I've learned. Like, I can do other writing a lot more easily.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really hard.
Oh, it's so hard.
Yeah.
It's just writing is hard.
See, I think writing is the most natural thing in the world. And anything I can do, I think is easy. I'm like, what? You can write a book. But, like, things I can't do, I'm like, they're impossible. How yeah. could anybody write? I actually do have a half hour that I'm working on. I never seem to have the time. And I can't tell if it's good.
Mm.
I have no gauge.
It's so weird. After a while, like my partner and I, well, see, this is the beauty of stand-up comedy is you can try jokes out on stage.
Yeah.
And then you can put them in your script.
But still, writing funny lines is not hard. It's making the format.
The story and the format, yeah. And after a while, we were like, is this funny? We don't know anymore. So we'd have to send it to people to mm-hmm. give us notes.
Yeah.
They would tell us, this is really good.
Yeah.
This is really good. So one of the top showrunners in town read it and gave us notes and gave it to APA for us.
Yeah.
And he gave it to them.
But why can't he then go give it to, like, executives who can then...
Because he's running a show right
now.
Yeah, he's super busy.
And I mean, the faith thing. To bring it back to the faith thing and to, like, you know...
You have to let it go, right?
Well, yeah. And, like, you kneeling and hearing the voice that tells you to get a puppy and then to go to AA. Like, how can people like us doubt that things are not happening exactly how they're supposed to? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I know. I was in a place this morning with my boyfriend. I was crying to him. I was like, I'm just frustrated. I'm tired of working so hard and not generating any income right now, you know?
Right.
And he was like, okay, that's just today. What do you have to do today? I go, well, I'm going to a podcast. I was so happy I had this podcast because I had something to do that meant something to me, you know?
Right.
And he was like, just focus on today. Let the universe take care of the rest. Let God take care of the rest, you know? And I forgot for a minute that I wasn't in charge.
Oh, I forget for hours. You only forgot for a minute?
No, I mean, I've been forgetting for a week.
It's so hard, but, like, I don't know about you, but, you know, well, first of all, you start that show, now you're teaching. That was never part of the plan.
No.
Like, we don't know why something's not working.
Right.
Until sometimes years later.
Yeah.
And we don't know when something will work. Just not on our schedule.
Right.
You know, I feel like my higher power works with, like, you want this to happen like this? Well, the more you push for that, the more I'm not going to give it to you. And the more, I mean, I don't know if it's that punishing a higher power. It's not punishing. Right. It's loving. It wants what's best for me.
Right. But when I get into a place of pushing, it doesn't feel good. No. I like the law of least resistance.
Yeah.
You know, just do less and accomplish more.
Yeah.
And I've been in the place of pushing lately, and it's going overboard.
I know. Like, we're supposed to, like, when we feel like that, like, go to the beach. Like, when you think you need to
go to a meeting.
You know that, too. Okay, such a good note to end on. Thank you so much for doing
this. Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, so she was a pretty funny woman, and she is Lisa Sunstedt. And I hope you loved her the way that I did and the way I love you. So thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.